It's called to order the AIP meeting for 9:30 at May 7th. Joe, could you give us the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, a nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Can we get approval for the minutes on April 2nd?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Any opposed? Sorry. All right. Motion carries. All right. Moving on to departmental requests. Marie?
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. So checking out your boots. All right. So my first item that I'm requesting is approving the addition of the agricultural lands to certified agricultural districts. We'll have the public hearing first on the 19th, and then I'm asking for that. This year, it looks like we've got about 21 parcels and a little over 1,100 acres that we'll be putting in there. So we had a very good turnout of responses for that. So I think, you know, perhaps maybe some of the social media, Eddie put out a nice post on the Facebook about the 30-day inclusion. And, you know, I think that perhaps spurred a little bit more interest too.
Can we get any questions? Can we get a motion?
Make a motion.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries.
And then the second thing is the New York Planning Federation Conference. So that was in Cooperstown a few weeks ago. During that, we were awarded a certificate of recognition for our comprehensive plan. So thank you to Mr. Cool for nominating that. Jack was in support of that too. So we got this nice certificate. They did not tell me that you did a little speech. I was worried about salad in my teeth. But Matt Horn from MRB was there. Matt Sousa was not, but I made sure to give them each a shout out because since they were there and were a big part of that, and we have this nice certificate. I picked up a little lapel pin for Mr. Cool there too, to say thank you for doing that. And we have this nice certificate to go in the planning department too. So thank you for everyone that did all their input on that. And working towards that. There was another very interesting session about a quicker and less time consuming comprehensive plan. So there were some really interesting points in that too, you know, rather than taking 18 months, you know, shorten it a little bit. And it was very informative. So if any of you are interested in that or anything else about the conference, please stop by and see me. All right. So, and that's it for me.
All right. Thanks, Marie.
Thanks.
Hey,
and the horse you Griffin? Rode in on, right? And the horse you rode in on.
Good morning.
Morning.
For my only item for the meeting today is for the Hall of Fame to submit the inductees. This year we have inducted four. They are Phyllis Rathbun, Linda Teeter, Austin Stewart, and Donald Dutch Hoag. I am submitting these for vote of approval for the AIP committee. Would any of you like to hear any of their summaries for their nominations at all? All right. Phyllis Rathbun worked for 74 years to date as a 4-H leader, educated youth throughout her career, teaching skills such as sewing, cooking, baking, and has gone further in teaching children leadership skills, home improvement, and public speaking to 4-H children. These meetings have been held in her home, and each child she influenced was treated like her own. Linda Teeter, I'm sure all of you know Linda very well, has officially served Steuben County for 38 years through RSVP and was selected to be the founding director of the Steuben County Office for the Aging in 1984. After retiring in 2010, Teeter continued to serve the community by serving as executive director and president for numerous nonprofit agencies and organizations. Austin Stewart. Stewart was an enslaved man who was brought to Bath in early 1800 from Virginia. After being taught how to read and write, a punishable offense, Stewart escaped from the plantation in Bath and moved to Rochester, where he built a prosperous life. He worked alongside famed abolitionist Frederick Douglass. He is the author of an autobiography memoir, 22 Years a Slave and 40 Years a Free Man. He worked on the Underground Railroad and was a staunch promoter of abolition. Donald Dutch Hoag was a famous race car driver from the 1940s to the 1950s. He raced on modified dirt asphalt tracks and all around the Genesee region. He won many awards and races. Chief among those accolades was his win at the National Open, which he won 5 times, which I have been told was more than any other racer in history. He was also a well-respected business owner in the local Steuben County area. Those are the summaries.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Make a motion.
Yep.
Second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Griffin. Appreciate it.
I'll see you again at the full legislative meeting.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, Jack. All right. Thank you. Have one item on the agenda, and then if I may, one request that didn't make it. I sent around an email to you all regarding new state legislation that has been introduced in the New York State Senate. It's currently in committee that would ban land application of biosolids for 5 years in New York and also require additional groundwater and soil testing. There's been a lot of conversations about, you know, what the county, what this board can do when it comes to this not having any regulatory authority. One of the things in talking with the chair that you can certainly do is this provides an opportunity because there is now legislation that should you want to get behind, it would be a memorializing resolution supporting and urging passing of that bill. So presenting to you for discussion.
Yeah. I definitely think we should move forward with that. I'd urge the committee to go ahead with the motion and approve this memorialization. We know it's been an issue with Mr. Wells, is that his name? over and over again for the last 30 years, but it's finally come to the forefront. And I do think it's a serious situation. And I think the community is going to support this.
It's not going to go away. We know it's not going to go away. It's going to get worse. So I also support it.
All right. Can we get a motion for
the motion? You
would need a motion, yes.
Make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. And apologies, the one that didn't make it, but it's a request to issue an RFP. I've been contacted by 3 different individuals looking and questioning the new property that we purchased across from the jail. 3 individuals have contacted about, hey, can I farm that, hay it, plant corn, something like that, because it's public property. We would need to issue an RFP. Frankly, it'd save our crew on mowing or haying. So I think it makes a lot of sense, but we'd issue an RFP. They could respond of, you know, what they're proposing, whether they're proposing to, you know, hay it, plant any corn, and what they would compensate us for. So that'd have to come back to you, but we don't have it budgeted. So looking for an authorization to issue that RFP.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Any questions?
Has there been any planning about other uses for this plot of land?
Not particularly.
No other department, no one within the county has kind of sought any potential use of it?
No, we've had informal conversations about some things with some departments, but nothing that is even close to what we would consider, you know, ready to present to you. I think there's potential in the future, especially, you know, when you look at what we're doing with EMS. But again, having the Hammondsport location might, you know, might offset that. But short answer is some conversations, but nothing really formal.
It was bought on the long-term strategy of no one else can have it because it sits across from our jail and 911 center. And so we should protect it for future use.
Yeah. And it was on the market for multiple years with no purchase. So, yeah. But yeah, it seems like it would be good to have someone take care of it for us. So
basically you put it out for bid per acre, what they want to pay rent per acre on it.
Yeah, that's basically it. And also we would want them to define, you know, what the proposed use is.
Yeah.
But to rent, not to buy.
It'd be a lease, essentially.
Or lease. No,
it'd be just a agricultural lease, so yep. Much per acre.
Yep.
And you might want to put a restriction on they can't spread biosolids.
Nah. Yeah. Good one. That would not be good across from our facilities.
Can't grow marijuana there either.
Oh, you can't? Okay, we'll put that in there.
They have a license.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Oppose? All right, motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul, before...
Okay.
Before Jamie comes out, could I just quickly give you an update on the Cornell Cooperative Extension report? Because she's not here. She wasn't able to come. So this is from what she said. We're hosting the New York State Shoot for All. The New York State 4-H'ers are here in Bath, the Bath Rod and Gun Club, next weekend. They're busy prepping for our agriculture in the classroom farm tour for grades K through 3 at Smith's Stock Farm, as well as the outdoor field day at Bosie's and Cooper's Plains for grades 4 through 7. Being done in collaboration with Bosie's and the Soil and Water. Both events are in June. We're also prepping for the veggie van at 7 sites this summer with a prolonged season thanks to the support of the Steuben County Office of the Aging. Christine, she's here. Guthrie's also paying a farmer to have a site at Centerway, these are amazing because it's grown so much. We're getting a lot of inquiries from gardeners and have been doing a lot of soil tests for farmers. And they're looking forward to our second annual 4-H summer showcase. And they're busy hosting classes to help 4-H'ers get ready for it.
Perfect. Thanks for the update, Hilda. Okay. Jamie Johnson, come on up to Bend County IDA.
Can I just ask a cool question? It's been a number of years, I think, since we've looked into lumber harvesting on our properties. Have we thought about that again?
Yeah, I will talk with Eric. We, on some of the properties, I think we did it not too long ago. Yeah, we have. So it's kind of an ongoing process. We have a contract with a forester to do that, but we can get an update for you.
Public Works. What was it, 27,000?
I can't remember.
I think it was $27,000 for the north side of the thing, of the landfill that we own.
Thank you.
That was on Monday.
Jamie?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I don't have boots, so they are nice.
Hers won't fit you either.
A few quick updates this morning. We just got done wrapping up our 2024 performance reporting that we have to send to the state that was submitted in April. Some of the key takeaways from the performance reporting that we do, and this is something we do every year. The IDA directly supported, and I think that's key. We have direct benefits going to 62 active projects, but the number of businesses that we support, you know, that are not direct IDA projects are much larger than that. That 62 number was an increase of 5 from 2023. In 2024, those projects in our effort supported 6,681 jobs, which represents almost $800 million in payroll in Steuben County. total job performance over the projected goal. So every time we provide a benefit, there is a projected employment goal that these companies have to get to. And we've exceeded that employment goal over the life of our IDA projects by almost 1,000. It was 981 jobs. So we're very proud of that. Year-to-year performance was also positive, with companies creating 433 jobs from 2023 to 2024. So it was a very positive year. We also gather information about investments, and this is where it gets a little interesting. During the reporting period, IDA projects only invested $39 million, and that's a big number, but I say only $39 million because it was off by almost $59 million from the year before. And the only thing that I can ascertain is that, you know, we talked a lot about it at the IDA board about uncertainty of the election last year. And I think because of that uncertainty, we saw companies withhold their investments. And now we're starting to see some of that release with some companies and some projects that we're working with, you know, proposing substantial investments. But because of tariff issues and other policy issues, there is a, you know, a slowdown in that investment and that pent up demand. So it's something we're going to be watching very closely over the next several months and throughout 2025. On to specific projects, the Alstom Crissy Award, which is the next generation freight engine project that's going to be constructed in Kenona. We continue to work with the FRA, Federal Rail Administration, and Alstom and Norfolk Southern on getting a contract in place. As you can expect, that got caught up in the federal government's review of agencies, and then tariff implications are complicating getting that contract in place as well, because several of the components were being brought in from Europe, where the technology is more prevalent. So Alstom has had to go back and reassess all of the components of the new freight engine, and there will need to be Buy America waivers that we're going to have to submit, and we're working with Alstom and NSR on that right now, because there are certain components that just are not made in the United States. One of which is the battery cells, which was, you know, really interesting, because you can find, and they have found, a company in the United States in Florida actually that will make the batteries, but the cells inside of the batteries, all battery cells, are made in China. So you just physically cannot get a battery cell produced in the United States. They get assembled here, but the cells aren't produced. So, you know, we'll be working with Norfolk Southern and Alstom over the next several weeks and months to get those Buy America waivers in. And then it's a waiting period to see, you know, when and if those get approved and how it's going to impact the project. But we are still moving forward with that. And, you know, the hope is that, you know, over the next several months, we'll have all of the contracts in place and they can begin, you know, work on these new freight engines and that new technology. Regarding rail development, you know, we hear a lot about the growth and growth opportunities at Alstom and others in the area, the announcement of Siemens Mobility and Horseheads and CAF USA. So as a result, we actually partnered with Three Rivers Development and Southern Tier Economic Growth to do a rail industry demand analysis in order to understand the current state and future demand of rail car production in the United States. The report is in draft form. It's going to be released in the next couple of weeks, and we'll make sure that all of you get a copy of that once it's released. But I did want to go over a few key takeaways that we've seen. As we would have expected, Steuben County and Chemung counties have outperformed both state and national industry trends, you know, with the assets that we have here. However, there was a lot of information in there about workforce and continued growth in the industry being stifled by our availability of workforce. It found that there were severe gaps in high skill occupations like supervisor and engineering roles. High retirement risks in occupation. These are things that we've known for quite some time that are coming. And that, you know, our local talent pipeline really is struggling to meet the demands of engineers, welders, and other maintenance types of individuals. The other thing which we've suspected, but it's good to see it in a report, because I think it helps us when we go out and to try to develop new programs and leverage funds for workforce development, is there is a significant cross-sector competition for talent between industry sectors. So, you know, the workforce that Alstom needs is the same workforce that Corning needs, is the same workforce that Siemens Energy needs. So, you know, what we need to start thinking about from a workforce training standpoint isn't specific industry training, it's skills training. And that's something that, you know, we've been talking about for a while. The report also provides, you know, various details on supply chain opportunities. There's significant supply chain opportunities. But as with everything, you know, industry demand for new rail cars, tariff and trade policies are really going to impact, you know, the ability to grow. We've already seen, you know, in our talks with Alstom, you know, some of the opportunities that exist out there are being delayed because of uncertainty regarding, you know, trade and tariff policies. We're continuing to see substantial growth in our food processing businesses, particularly HP Hood and Bellagioso. You know, they both continue to perform well and are looking at various upgrades in their facilities. So we hope to be able to report more on both of those as we move forward. You know, we are helping facilitate conversations between the City of Hornell wastewater treatment and HP Hood regarding phosphorus levels. You know, the Chesapeake Bay watershed requirements are very stringent, which means, you know, the city's wastewater system has to meet stringent requirements, and they're passing those requirements on to you know, the industrial users, and being one of the largest phosphorus the largest companies that deal with phosphorus, you know, Hood is feeling the pinch of those regulatory concerns, and it's nothing to do with anything with Hood. It's just that milk is high in phosphorus, and by nature what they're producing, they have to deal with it. So, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth conversations, and, you know, I hope we can make progress with the city and HP Hood moving forward. Park Grove Realty in Irwin, the Irwin Housing Project. If you all recall, we approached this group a few months ago about supporting an application for infrastructure funds through the state of New York to support this housing development. It'll be 100-unit market rate housing development in the town of Irwin. If you're familiar with the town, it's literally right below the Irene Housing Development is where it's going to be. The project was presented to the planning board Tuesday night and starting to work its way through the planning board approval, and with the hopes of getting those approvals in place to start construction. I would say, I'll say early fall. They're saying late summer, but probably early fall. We're still waiting to hear back from, you know, the grant request. I'm sure that's just been delayed because the state doesn't have a budget yet. So, you know, we're hoping that once the budget gets in place, there's going to be a lot of these types of requests that are going to flow, including the Urbana-Hammondsport New York Forward funds that we're waiting to have an announcement on, as well as the Restore New York applications, which the Curtis School in Hammondsport has a large request in. And, you know, they're just waiting for announcements. And we were told by the state about 2 weeks ago that we should expect an announcement in 2 weeks. A week later, the governor announced that there was a budget deal. I talked to the state and they said, yep, we asked the same thing. We expect an announcement soon. And then we found out that the budget deal really wasn't a budget deal, and it was just an announcement. And now we're still waiting for the budget. So, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that things are going to move very quickly once that budget is approved. Regarding New York Forward, Bath New York Forward is getting ready to get underway. That was a huge win for the community. I've been asked to sit on the local planning committee for that effort. And the first meeting is expected to be held May 22nd. So you'll begin to hear a lot about, you know, identifying projects and investments that will be coming to the village of Bath as a result of the work that's being done there. On the renewable front, a lot of activity and a lot of updates. Barren Wind Phase 2, which is basically wind development in Fremont, is under construction and anticipated to be complete the fourth quarter of 2025 with energization in 2026. That will be the pilot will go into effect next year for that. Prattsburg Wind, this project would like to start later this year, starting to develop their access roads and their site development. This is a $600 million investment to construct 36 turbines from basically Prattsburg all the way down to Howard. So it includes, you know, municipalities like the town of Avoca, Wheeler, Prattsburg, of course, Howard, the missing one, but it's a 147 megawatt project. As I said, $600 million investment. The project itself is going to generate over $19 million in new tax revenue over the lifespan of the project, with an anticipated $35 million in host benefit payments, as well as lease payments to the landowners over a 20-year period. Right now, we're working with impacted communities, and we'll be seeking approval from the county in the coming weeks and months for consent resolutions to lock in the pilot payments. So we'll have more on that hopefully in June, when we can get in front of this body again to present that. Canastillo Wind. Next week, we anticipate finalizing all of the approvals for Canastillo Wind. This project will end up being the largest onshore wind development in the state of New York at the moment. It's a $1 billion investment. They're going to construct a 250 megawatt project, which is going to generate over $40 million in new property tax revenue over the lifespan of that. So, you know, impacted communities like Greenwood and Canastillo and the city of Hornell and town of Hornellsville, as well as the school districts in the county, are going to see a significant benefit from that. On the solar side of things, you know, we've got several projects that are kind of working their way through the queue. The New York Independent System Operators, NYISO, it has to review all the interconnection requests. And I look at Jill, you know, when we talk about solar, because she is my resident solar expert. I've said, you learn everything solar and I'll handle the wind side of things. We've got a 120 megawatt project in the pipeline for Wayland, 100 megawatt project for Addison, Campbell, and Irwin, and then several other smaller projects that are in this NYISO queue, and they're reviewing them in batches now. So because of this new process, it has kind of delayed the process that is getting underway. You know, solar is a much different animal than wind. The economics are different. The land that it needs is different. They're just interesting projects to work through. And our position on both wind and solar is that, you know, we are glad to support as long as the community supports. So, you know, we're working closely with the developers and the municipalities to make sure that all of that support is in place. And then on the infrastructure front, and then I'm happy to open it up for questions. Town of Prattsburg Wastewater, the town is working on completing their map plan and report and get that in by May. There is a downtown wastewater system that has been fully funded. It's very much the same design as what has been installed in Hammondsport, where it's just going to serve a very small area in the downtown, but it will help that downtown redevelop a lot of the vacant spaces that are currently there. We're hoping to see construction begin next year on that project, because all of the funding has been identified and approved and is in place. The town of Bath, the Lake Salubria Wastewater, some of you may have heard or attended that there was a public informational meeting on April 10th. There were over 100 people that were there. The project engineers presented the timeline and the individual property owner specifics. Bidding process is anticipated to be completed in June, and construction is targeted for summer or fall. So that project is going to finally move forward as well. And then I am thrilled to say, after 10 years of working on this, the Village of Hammondsport Wastewater System, I'm here to say that I'm not going to report on this ever again to this group. The lateral connections are expected to be completed by the end of this month, bringing the system fully online and operational. So we're thrilled to finally have that project complete and in servicing the downtown area. So
get a bottle of Great Western champagne in
I just I want to take it off my reports. You know, I don't want to have to report it anymore. It's a great project, but it's been a long time coming. Any questions?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank you for Jamie helped us get the secure the hood location for our November inter-county meeting. And I dare say most of the 40 legislators who come to our meetings throughout the Western region have not been in that part of the county. And so I'm really excited about we're going to host the meeting and hand out some really goodies. And also, you know, everybody likes, what do you call it? Dip.
The hell of a good dip. Yeah.
So we're going to, and with your help, we got that. So thank you.
You're welcome. Well, and we don't realize how fortunate we are in the county. I mean, Steuben County is home to hell of a good dip. It was just recognized as the national number one brand of dip category in the category for whatever competition they are. It just, you know, went national just this year, with contracts all across the country. You know, and it's all made here, every bit of it. And Jill and I were out there last week, and we were one of the first, public representatives to taste their soon to be released new flavor, which is Mike's Hot Honey. So there is going to be a Mike's Hot Honey dip, which was very good. We enjoyed it, but, you know, it's a great story to tell that I don't think we tell enough of, is that, you know, we are home to, you know, this national brand on one end. And then with Bellagioso bringing Palio back, we're once again home to Palio cheese, and all the Palio cheeses are made right here in Steuben County.
Well, maybe we'll do that one next year.
Okay.
Soon to be released, but have they announced it yet? Because with Hilda, and
I think they've announced it. They just haven't. It hasn't been released. I mean, all the packaging is done, and and I see we've got Mr. O'Neill from WLEA on here, so I'm sure he'll be calling me after this. Hi, Brian.
Is the project in Irwin contingent on that grant?
Yes.
So they're going through planning and all that, but unless the grant is awarded,
yes. Yeah, so that project, we've been working on that project off and on since 2016, and one of the biggest hurdles that we've hit with that has been the infrastructure. So the timing of this announcement of the state supporting infrastructure for housing was almost perfect timing for this project. I feel very confident that we submitted a competitive application, and based on what I've heard, not every county, they were kind of going out there saying that every county is going to get one award. And, what I've been told is not every county submitted a request this cycle, because they just weren't ready. We didn't have a project that was ready. So the state has said that if there's money left over, they're going to open it back up again. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that that's the case, and that they, recognize the efforts that went into that.
The town of Irwin has their own development agency, don't they?
Yes.
So, but the county one is managing it?
The Irwin IDA, which Mr. Cool and Jill are both on that board. The county IDA has always deferred project development the Irwin IDA has always deferred it to the county IDA, just because of the administrative requirements that go into, you know, having the applications, having the meetings, getting the approvals, and then the ongoing monitoring that we have to do. So it's
they're there for the ribbon cutting, but they don't really do the work.
Okay. You know, happy to stand behind the scenes while
you're going to lose your invite.
Now, is this, what's level of housing is this going to be for? Is it
market rate? Bob, $2,000 a month rent. Yeah.
They're going to be nice townhouse developments.
Okay.
Yeah.
Market rate if you work up the hill at Sullivan Park.
Yeah.
It's not low income. It is. Yeah. I would say, you know, if you look at the developments that Reedman put in on Denison Park, their entry level market rate, what we would consider entry level market rate, these are probably the next step up. You know, if you want private garages and, you know, three bedrooms and, you know, all the amenities that go along with it, yeah, you know, that's what you're going to get.
Hey, any other questions? All right, Jamie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any other business? Fred?
Yes, at time to time, I've received questions from members of this body about the status of the Jasper Truesbury High School. Last week, the FEMA approved the directed relocation for a new building there, which means that they will pay for the new building and the demolition of the old building. This is going through under the first flooding event so that it will be 90% funded by FEMA, 10% by the state. If it had gone under the second flooding event, it would have been 75% FEMA, 25% local cost. So that's a big thing. There were three criteria they have to meet. One was multiple events in the location, which they've met. The second was the 55% rehabilitation cost of the old building compared to the cost of a new building. They've met that. And the last thing is once they get a site negotiated, then they have to have the environmental approval on it. So that should be the easiest of the three to get through.
It's the new site?
We don't know yet. They're negotiating. And there's a cap as to how much the state will fund for paying for a lot. They're not going to pay somebody $1 million.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I missed this with my absence earlier, but did any updates on the flooding issues from this week?
Sent an email about it. Have to get an update where the crews are today. We had the county route, and I can't remember the number off the top of my head, between Hornell and Alfred had pretty significant shoulder damage. A lot of shoulder washouts. So the crews were mostly there. Yesterday we had a little bit in Fremont. Is it Baker's Gulch?
Or 14.
County Route 14. We did close for a while. That's really, really narrow and the water just pours through there. Hopefully no more rain. Yeah. It looked like, you know, no significant infrastructure damage. The shoulders are going to be something that was our biggest, but the crews have done a phenomenal job. A lot of clearing roadways of silt and rock and debris and that sort of stuff just to get them passable.
Okay.
And, from the state standpoint, it looked like portions of 36, and it was the same, it was near the house that we visited when the governor was here, around Willow Bend, Red Creek Run area. They were down to one lane just because they had a lot of water and debris come up, but not as bad as it could have been, but we definitely don't need more rain.
Exactly. Agreed. Okay. Thanks, Jack, for the update. Appreciate it. All right, you guys.
I'd like to add to that, where they've done the stream cleaning and so forth has made a huge difference. That was evident with this
training event. And shows the need for more, but yes. I actually had a meeting in the area and kind of drove by where we call it Short 119, the bridge that had the mobile home against it, where Bennett's Creek feeds into that. That's where we had significant issues last time. And it was actually, you probably won't want me to say this, Eric on a bulldozer the couple days after clearing that channel, and Colonel Bill's, which used to get bottled up right there as it flows into the Canisteo, was flowing nice and free. Mm-hmm. And the state has done a tremendous amount of work on Colonel Bill's further down by 36. So that stream channel is much more open to be able to take the rain.
But as you say, there's still a lot of work to be done. Yeah, and FEMA is kind of dragging their feet on the mitigation funding now, which is not good.
Kelly?
I just wanted to ask if there was any update on our high-speed internet project.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Chris and I will definitely send you an email later. We have our monthly status call with Empire this afternoon. As of the last status call, they had completed about 30 miles of fiber. So as I think I've reported before, their significant, the delay was getting the pole attachments and make ready from NYSEG. Steuben Rural Electric has been much quicker, which is typical. And NYSEG, we've complained to the state, Empire's complained to the state, they are notoriously slow in processing pole attachment agreements. So that's a frustration. The good news is they are actively installing fiber as we speak. The Hornby portion of the project is nearly complete. The Howard portion of the project is nearly complete. And then they're going to be pretty heavy into the Caton area, Bradford area, Savona area next. So we'll get an update on how many more miles have been run since this month. And we'll email it to you all. And the only other update, and I've shared it with the chair, is we are still waiting on, I told you we have an application in to connect all the broadband office of New York State for the 646 additional residents or homes to be connected. And we're waiting on them. We've provided them over the course of about 6 months all the information that they've requested. And had a call with Josh Breitbart, who's the head of the Connect All office, and his staff. And they said they really, really like the project. They just need to find which of their, because they have like, you folks might see it through NYSAC or other means. They have like 4 or 5 active grants. They've advised that they really like the project, but they want to figure out which grant it would fit under.
You should know that, I think I reported this before, that Spectrum has come out my road and already attached to the NYSEG poles that are out back and is actively hooking up the people that are on my road. I sent Jack a picture because the Spectrum gentleman, when they were on my road, said they'd have that project done that day. And the next day I had a card on my door with the salesman's name and phone number to call to access high-speed internet. So Spectrum is also on the move. And so I just don't understand why they can attach to poles so much more quickly than Empire.
Yeah, and the unknown, and I haven't been able to get an answer, is it's unknown if they have more quickly attached, because we don't know when they submitted their application in NYSEG to attach. They could have submitted it before Empire did. So that's the big unknown. It's a frustration with NYSEG, and it's not unique to Empire. Anyone being on the STN board, as you all know, it's a nightmare when STN is running fiber to get those NYSEG pole attachments. And we call the Public Service Commission and complain, but they take a year or two to approve pole attachments and make readies, which is frustrating.
The 8-point-whatever-million-dollar project this is Empire getting it in progress payments on completion?
So soon. I've been surprised that they, and we've told them we have the money, most of it at federal, about 1.6 county in county dollars. We've told them we could pay them for services completed, including, because they have, when they submit pole attachments, they have to pay. They had to engineer this whole thing, which again was the front end work. And that has a cost. I'll ask them today, but we had a meeting with them, 2 weeks ago, Chris, and said, we're ready to process payment, but for some reason they haven't wanted it yet.
Okay. But as long as we've committed that money, we meet the ARPA requirements as far as timing.
It had to be committed by December 31st, 2024. So we met that. Has to be spent by December 31st, 2026.
Okay. Thank you.
So does that mean you have the ability now to have internet access from Spectrum?
Oh, thank God.
The truth is. So I'll stop talking about it. I doubt it.
A map of the completed of where they're
going. Internet, and until everybody has it, I'm not going to stop complaining. So get used to it.
I'm not technically oriented, but you. So
Spectrum, I would agree with that.
Be quiet. So Spectrum and Empire can all be on the same pole.
Yeah, if you look out at most of these, especially not so much in a rural area, you normally don't see multiple. But yes, around here, and you wouldn't notice it unless you know what to look for, which I don't either. I can see it, but yes, they service providers, as long as NYSEG or Rural Electric, or in this case, Bath Gas, as long as they approve it to be attached to that pole, they can. And so
they are in Irwin.
Yeah. Yep. Spectrum has long been in, I'll speak about Bath, has long been in Bath. They were the only high-speed internet service provider, high-speed, for the longest time. Empire, we call it, or the industry calls it overbuild. So they attach fiber as well and offer services as well. So yes, multiple providers can be on the same.
Verizon Internet. Because we switched, we've now got Verizon Internet. We don't have Spectrum anymore.
Yeah, you know, that's probably a completely different set of cable. Yeah. Yep, so we'll send out an update after we get it from Empire today. Yep.
Okay. Everything? Okay, give me entertain a motion to dismiss. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Meeting is dismissed. Okay.